children. What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Good evening and welcome back to Mask's weekly radio show on Family Matters. Mask, mothers and fathers aligned, saving kids, kids of in all stages for all mental health struggles, including addiction. If you know someone that would benefit from a parent support room, either by Zoom or in person, please give them our number, 718-758-0400. I'll repeat the number. Maybe you need a referral for a therapist, an outpatient clinic, an inpatient rehab, any parent groups, please give us a call. And if you want a naloxone free training, free kit, we can get those kits to you if we train you by Zoom. So I'll repeat our number again. Maybe it's for yourself, a loved one, a neighbor, or someone you usually would sit next to and show. Our number, again, 718-758-0400. Tonight, I'm really happy to have on with us a colleague, a friend, somebody that we've been really trying to get on for some time now, and that is Dr. Burstein, Sarah Burstein, who is a child and adolescent and adult psychiatrist who practices in Long Island. And she also is a clinical assistant professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Albert Einstein College of Medicine. I want you to know, Dr. Burstein is a specialist when it comes to ADHD, and we are so happy to have you on tonight. How are you?
I'm so good. Thank you so much for having me, Rahama. I really appreciate you having me on your show and having this opportunity to talk to you tonight about ADHD.
Well, thank you. I know you're really, really busy, and thank you for making the time. We've been after you for some time now, so we're really happy that you're able to be on with us.
Thank you so much. I am too.
So, doctor, let's first define what is ADHD for my listeners, please.
Sure. So ADHD stands for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, which we used to just call ADD. It's a condition that can make it hard to sit still, hard to pay attention, or make good decisions. We really see ADHD generally beginning in childhood in young children, and it can cause children to have trouble in school, at home, or with their friends. We know that ADHD tends to be more common in males than in females, but it is the most common neurobehavioral health disorder in children, affecting up to 10% of school-age children, and 70% of those will go on to have the disorder into adolescence, and 50% will have it into adulthood.
So, and can you explain what causes the ADHD?
Sure. So this is a great question, and scientists are studying every day what the causes and potential risk factors are in an effort to better understand ways to manage and reduce the chances of a person having ADHD. Right now, we actually don't know what the exact causes are or the exact risk factors, but the research shows that genetics do play a role, a very important role in ADHD, And the recent studies do link genetic factors with ADHD. But in addition to that, they are studying other possible causes, such as brain injury, exposures to environmental risks, such as lead during pregnancy or at a very young age. They're looking into the role that alcohol and tobacco use during pregnancy plays a role, and other things like premature delivery and low birth weight. Right now, the research does not support the view, which is pretty popular out there, that ADHD is caused by eating too much sugar, watching too much television. It does not support that parenting or the social and environmental factors such as poverty or family chaos are causes. And, you know, we do need to think about how these things can make symptoms worse, particularly in people who are predisposed to ADHD, but right now we don't have strong enough evidence to conclude that they are the causes of ADHD.
So, Doctor, young children in school, very early on, first grade, second grade, third grade, teachers are telling parents, please have your child checked out, be evaluated, whether or not they have ADHD. Now, there are different symptoms. For some, they could be, you know, trouble sitting still or paying close attention in class. And for others, it could be, you know, trouble getting organized, keeping their things, materials together, making careless mistakes. But there are other areas in the home and socially, in addition, that can be diagnosed as ADHD. So how does one diagnose, first of all, and what are the suspicious behaviors that you would say to a parent from an early age child, have your child be evaluated?
Sure. So children with ADHD tend to have symptoms that fall into two general categories. You threw some really big highlighted ones out there. So we look for things like trouble paying attention. So a child can be forgetful, lose things easily, having trouble finishing a project or a task. So that might be a school project, that might be homework, that might be we ask a child to clean up their toys and they get distracted halfway through, or they're in a conversation and get distracted halfway through the conversation. The other big category is the hyperactivity category. So that means increased activity. We say sometimes it looks like kids are constantly on the go or driven by a motor. That might look like trouble sitting still in class. It might mean that they can't play quietly. We see this really early. So think about the kids that have trouble in preschool, sitting in circle time, staying in the line, waiting their turn. These are some of the big things. But there are other symptoms out there that we want to think about. So things like poor decision making. That could be as simple as a child interrupting others, or it might be something a lot more dangerous, like running across the street without thinking that through. These are kids that often look like they're daydreaming, or they, like I said, they forget, they lose things, they squirm, they fidget. This might be the kid that's just talking too much. Maybe he's making careless mistakes, rushing, unnecessary risks, being impulsive, having a hard time resisting temptation, difficulty getting along with other kids. And we can see some of this by the time a child is about 4 years old, which is over time. So we want to think about this from a lot of different angles. And that you want to talk to your doctor about this if you're concerned about symptoms of ADHD. And we want to think about, is this happening in more than one place? So if parents tell me it's just happening at school or just happening at home, we might want to be a little bit more discerning about what's going on. Has this been happening for at least 6 months? have these symptoms started before the age of 12, if they came out just completely out of the blue as a teenager, again, we want to think about what else might be going on. And then key to this, to making a diagnosis, is this affecting a child's functioning? So for kids, that means, are they functioning at school? Are they making friendships and getting along with their peers? And I say this, you know, that we need to think about this from what else is happening, because there are a lot of other conditions out there that can cause symptoms similar to ADHD. Attention issues and difficulty focusing in school may be due to other things like anxiety, depression, or learning issues. So, for example, a child who's having trouble learning to read may look like he's not paying attention or having a difficult time in school, but it may have nothing to do with ADHD. So we really want to take a comprehensive look. And the other thing that has come up a tremendous amount lately is, you know, attention in light of the pandemic, because we know kids who were working remotely, adults working remotely, really struggled to pay attention. But it might have nothing to do with ADHD and maybe much more related to the environment that they're working in. I can't tell you how many kids I've spoken to over the last year and a half that said they were having trouble focusing, but then told me they were doing school from their bed or distracted by all the other things in their bedroom. So really, it's important to tease out what's going on and where.
And I must add, it says, attention deficit, the word deficit, it's a little confusing, because I know that ADHD kids are always looking to engage in something very challenging and interesting, and like their nervous system is really at rest. So it can be confusing when you hear the word deficit. There are so many talented people that have ADHD.
Totally. And there are people who struggle with ADHD and we give them that diagnosis that don't have any of the inattention symptoms. So we can make a diagnosis of ADHD inattentive type, ADHD hyperactive type, or a combined type. So they may not struggle with attention at all. And unfortunately, the name just lumps it all together. But it's really important to look at an individual, because there, as you said, people can have extremely successful lives and talents that are not captured by a diagnosis. So it's just a diagnosis, but doesn't explain an individual.
Right. Doctor, I know that on our helpline, parents often describe your ADHD child as being lazy, that they're showing symptoms of, you know, they're not willing to engage easy in different activities or tasks. I'd like you to explain why they have trouble staying motivated.
Oh, this is a great question. And a really complicated answer. But again, if we think about it, really breaking down what the symptoms are, it makes a lot of sense. If a child's disorder is making it difficult to function, to pay attention, if it makes it difficult for them to focus on the details, to organize a task in a sequential way, they may not want to engage in the task because it's actually too challenging for their brain to do in that moment. They may not have the skill set to organize it in a way that works for them. And so they give up. And it's really sad, actually, because there are ways to help these kids, and they come across as lazy, but it's really coming from a place of their brain is not working in concert together to get them through the tasks necessary at that point in time.
So, I mean, parents struggle because if a teacher early on, young kids, and they say, you know, your child is not sitting in class, your child needs medicine, you know, right away parents react poorly to those suggestions because nobody wants to put their child on medication, especially at a young age. They always hopeful that things will change. So let's talk about, is there a cure for ADHD?
Sure. So unfortunately, there is no cure for ADHD, but there are many different treatments out there that can help improve a child's symptoms, behavior, and functioning. The hyperactivity and impulsivity do tend to decrease with age. However, the problems with attention often last longer and may actually worsen as school becomes more difficult. So there's no cure, but there is really good treatment out there.
So yeah, when the kids are younger and they have one teacher in the Hebrew subjects and one in the English, then they go a little higher, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, then they're in 9th grade and suddenly they have 10 different teachers. That is when things really become out of control. So let's talk about how one can treat ADHD.
Sure. So
And what does treatment involve?
Sure. So most experts would agree that unrecognized and untreated ADHD can have really serious consequences. So this could be things like school failure and dropout, depression, poor behavior, failed relationships, poor performance in the workplace. It can lead to an increased risk of accidents, but we know on the contrary that treatment can help a child to have a better relationships with parents, teachers, siblings, or peers. It can help them perform better in school, follow rules and instructions, which is a skill when you're in school and beyond, and it can actually lead to a decreased risk of smoking and substance use in the future. And we can treat ADHD in many different ways. Typically, we think about this in terms of behavioral treatment and medication. So treatment can improve symptoms and help children to do better at school and at home and with their friends. For the preschool and younger school-age children, we generally start with behavioral approaches. So there are changes that we can make at home and in school that can help kids who struggle with focus and executive function difficulties. So things like making a checklist for your child to use every morning so they remember what to do, having them write down their homework every day or keep it in the same place so they don't lose it. Simple interventions that really can go a long way. Teachers can really be an asset here too, and they can help make changes in the classroom to help children with ADHD do better in school. For example, the teacher might write down what the homework is every day on the board so the child doesn't forget to write it down themselves. They might allow a child to have time to finish their schoolwork. This could be preferential seating and quiet test-taking rooms to minimize distractions. And it's really important for parents to work with the teacher and the school to create a plan that's right for their child. So that might be as simple as talking to the teacher if they're really able to implement just a few changes on their own, or that might mean actually escalating this and getting what we call a 504 plan to have outlined accommodations for a child, and on an even higher level, getting an individualized education plan at the district level to really specify what a child needs that works for them. And this should be reviewed regularly because a child's needs change over time and as their symptoms change. But we know after age 6, most research tells us that medication is actually the most effective treatment compared to other treatments. But we do like to combine this with parent management training, counseling, behavior modification, and family work.
So you mentioned medication. Let's remember there are many, many, many families that are against meds. We are not saying that everybody should put their child on medication.
Absolutely.
Just
not.
Want to put that out there.
Correct.
But when there is a need for a child to be on meds and both parents agree with their psychiatrist not their regular medical doctor, always be seen by a psychiatrist to make these decisions. What are the medications that are most effective for young children today?
Sure. So this is, again, I just want to reiterate, a very individual decision. I actually think it's really helpful to start by talking to your child's pediatrician in a very straightforward case. They might be able to help, but then psychiatrists are always available to help, to
prescribe.
To prescribe and make that more individualized plan. And so I think your question was, I apologize, what is the medication for ADHD? And so these are the stimulants and the non-stimulant medications. Those are the general categories. And stimulants tend to work faster than the non-stimulants. We have two kinds of those. We have the methylphenidates and amphetamines that both come in short-acting and long-acting forms. So I'm going to throw out some brand names that you might have heard of. I don't work with any pharmaceutical companies or endorse any particular brands, but these are methylphenidates or medications like Concerta or Ritalin. Amphetamines are medications like Adderall or Vyvanse. And then we have a whole class on its own of non-stimulant medications like Strattera. So we have a lot of different choices out there. And again, it's such an individualized decision, what is right for your child. And that can also change over time.
So let's talk about the side effects. And I just want to mention, when I say about going just to your medical doctor, what I meant was that there are a lot of people that are not going to see psychiatrists for their prescription in general of medication. So we want everyone to know that it's always best to get your prescription directly from a psychiatrist. Just want to put that out there. So side effects. You know, everybody's worried about what are the side effects and how to deal with them.
Yes, so this is one of the top questions that I get. And I always preface this by saying that all medications have potential for side effects. Most medications that we buy over the counter have a package insert that's a mile long, and we generally just toss it in the garbage without regard to what the side effects are. If you have a headache, you most likely are going to take a Tylenol without a second thought. And this is true for all prescription medications, which is to say, again, if you have a strep throat or an ear infection, you're likely going to treat that infection without really questioning what the potential side effects of the antibiotic are that is prescribed. And again, ADHD is a disorder that is just as important as anything that we can diagnose by looking under a microscope. And so it's good to ask questions, but also to understand that it's always a risk benefit when we treat anything in our children or ourselves. And we know that just like educational planning and accommodations, medications for children and adolescents with ADHD are well-studied, effective, and safe. The most common side effects that we see with stimulants are loss of appetite, difficulty falling asleep, dizziness, some irritability and moodiness, growth problems, although this was actually only shown to be a couple of centimeters, and heart problems. And we have ways of managing and monitoring all of the side effects. There are no unexpected long-term side effects of stimulants that we wouldn't see in the short term as well. So that's to say, being on the medication longer doesn't mean that surprise side effects are going to come up down the road. And with careful coordination with your child's doctor, most of these side effects can be managed with little to no long-term problems related to medication at all.
And do kids need to stay on these medications forever? It's a very popular question.
Absolutely. And it's one of my favorites. And the answer is no. So that's the short answer. And more nuanced, again, it's an individualized decision based on your circumstances and functioning. But if you're working closely with your doctor to monitor the symptoms, monitor how your kids are doing, It is completely reasonable to think about taking your child off of medication when the time is right. And so again, an individualized decision. You want to coordinate it when a child is functioning well in a low stress time, but it is certainly possible for people to come off of their medications and do completely fine without it. And that's to say, then there's other people who do well on it and want to stay on their medications because it works for them and they don't have side effects. And I think both sides are really important to consider.
Right. And at the end of the day, what matters most is being evaluated by, you know, discuss it with your doctor, then being evaluated by a psychiatrist, but also therapy is an important piece that you can offer to somebody that is struggling with ADHD as well.
Absolutely. It's so important to work with a good therapist who consults with your psychiatrist so that you're all on the same team.
Right. And just before we end, I wanted you to please describe what happens when a young adult as a kid did not get diagnosed, had a rough time in school, now is an adult and still struggling. What would you like to say to those adults?
I would say to them, it's never too late. It's important to, again, get a good comprehensive evaluation. Make sure your doctor is asking not just about your symptoms now, you want them to ask about how you did as a child. If they can consult with the parents, even if the patient is an adult, even better. And then medication can still work for adults. And therapy. You need a good therapist who is trained in working with people with ADHD and executive functioning issues so that you can build those skills and have a happy, successful, productive life.
Well, thank you, Dr. Bernstein, very much for coming on and discussing ADHD with us. And I sure hope to have you on again to discuss other important topics that children, adolescents, and adults are struggling with these days.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate being able to come on here and talk to you about this topic, and I would love to come back and share more.
Thank you. And I want to wish everybody a very good evening, a beautiful Shabbos, and always remember, hang in, hold on, and for now, virtually, hug tight. Tonight's show is in memory of Simcha Shmuel Ben Moshe. Please consider to go online and make a donation at maskparents.org. Thank you, and have a good night.
By popular demand, we're giving away to all our listeners. Anybody who writes in tonight will get a free pair of tickets to Soul Doctor, the Shlomo Kabach musical movie with Kulam sing-along, plus special performance by Nissan Black. It takes place this Saturday night, December 4th at 8:30 p.m. at AMC Times Square. All you have to do is send me an email to zevbrenner@gmail.com. Please put in your name, address, phone number, and zip code. And byline, put in Soul Doctor. And whoever emails me tonight will get a pair of tickets for Saturday night. That's zevbrenner@gmail.com. zevbrenner@gmail.com. This is our special Hanukkah gift to you in coordination with Soul Doctor, the Shlomo Kalbach Music. Please send your email right now to zevbrenner@gmail.com. It's time to put the simcha back into your special event. Superior Caterers will add a touch of perfection to any party. Sheva Brachas, Bar Mitzvah, Kiddush, Barbecue, Corporate Event, or any special occasion when only the best will do. Superior Caterers prides itself in its personal customer service and will customize a menu to make a food memory come to life for your guests. From Brooklyn to the Hamptons and everywhere in between, let Superior Caterers add a classy touch to your simcha party. Call 800-SIMCHAS for more information. You'll be glad you did. 800-SIMCHAS, and let the simcha begin. 800-SIMCHAS for the ultimate perfection. Certified GLOT under the KAJ and Babad. 800-SIMCHAS, Superior Caterers.
Talkline Network Radio, America's longest-running Jewish broadcast network. the voice of the Jewish community.